The purpose of religion is to create loving community, to foster relationships of mutual caring and respect, to nurture the human spirit, and to comfort, challenge, and inspire us as the need arises. The purpose of religion is to seek and find a moral compass for the soul, to make responsible use of the mind's powers, to help us become good stewards of God's green earth, and to be humble explorers of the universe. The purpose of religion is to explore life in all its fullness, to follow in the footsteps of those who have taught and lived the better way for humankind, and to uphold those universal values that make for peace, justice, and happiness the world over. The purpose of religion is to free itself from inhumanity, from bigotry and empty dogma, and to serve the cause of human welfare in a global commonwealth with joy and with compassion. So as we gather together in religious community this morning, may we remember these noble purposes around which we gather, and let us recommit ourselves to carrying this free faith onward together. These opening words by the Reverend Cliff Reid welcome all who have gathered this morning for our Sunday service. Welcome to those of you who are here in person at Essex Church. Welcome to all who are joining us via Zoom from far and wide, including our chums from Brighton Unitarians who are with us once again. It's good to have you with us. For anyone who doesn't know me, my name's Jane Blackall and I'm minister with Kensington Unitarians, and I'll be leading this morning's service along with our former minister, Sarah Tinker. And this morning's service is a really special one. We're marking the 250th anniversary of Essex Church. On the 17th of April 1774, Theophilus Lindsay led the very first service at the very first avowedly Unitarian chapel in Britain, the Essex Street Chapel, just off the Strand. And there's a direct line from that pioneering congregation to our own community here at Kensington Unitarians. That's why we're known as Essex Church. So this morning we're going to celebrate this landmark date in our congregation's history and the history of the whole Unitarian movement here in Britain, with a service titled Past, Present and Future. But we're going to light our chalice flame before we go any further, as we do each week. This is a moment to settle ourselves down, to be still, to remember what it is that brought us here, and to reconnect with that common purpose. This simple ritual connects us in solidarity with Unitarians and Unitarian Universalists the world over, and it reminds us of the proudly progressive religious tradition of which this gathering is part. I'm going to invite Sarah to come up and join me in saying our chalice lighting words this morning.
Across the generations, we have carried the flame. We fought the injustice, sang the songs, spoke for truth, and built something lasting. We join in the line and we carry the flame forward.
Across the generations, we are tending the flame. Hand in hand together, we share in the work of fighting injustice, singing the songs, speaking the truth, and we are here to build something lasting. We join in the line and we carry the flame forward.
Across the generations, we have been nourished by this flame. We're singing new songs, breaking old barriers, sharing in the work, and we find our own space in what has been. We are here to make space for the next person as well. We join in the line and we carry the flame forward.
Across the generations, this flame comes to us. We're here for the songs, for the justice, for the community sharing the work. We are here now too to build something new and lasting. We're ready for a new day together. We join in the line and we carry the flame forward. Thanks, Sarah. So in that spirit, time to sing Our first hymn today is number 135 in your green hymn books, Sing in Celebration. For those joining via Zoom, the words will be up on your screen. Feel free to stand or sit as you prefer for hymn number 135. Take all of those joys and concerns, both spoken and unspoken, into an extended time of prayer now. This is based on some words by Bruce Southworth. You might want to adjust your position to get more comfortable. You might want to put down anything you don't need to be holding. If there's a posture that helps you to feel more prayerful, whatever helps you get into the right state of body and mind for us to pray together now. Let's be fully present in this sacred time and space we co-create. Present with ourselves, with each other, and with that which lies within us and beyond us. Spirit of life, God of all love, in whom we live and move and have our being, we turn our full attention to you, the light within and without. As we tune into the depths of this life, and the greater wisdom to which and through which we are all intimately connected. Be with us now as we allow ourselves to drop into the silence and the stillness at the very centre of our being. As we gather together in prayer this morning, let us be aware of the varied human experience embodied in this community. We each go through such a mix of ups and downs. Sometimes life is tough and the world bears heavy on us. We struggle alone, search the depths, and long for healing, for renewed hope, for strength, which give their grace and peace. Each of us here gathered carries our own private griefs and burdens. Sometimes we can share these. And for the open hearts which respond with tender care, we're grateful. Each of us here gathered knows something of life's blessings too. So this bright spring morning, let us give thanks for all the joys that break through. Let us give thanks for the care and compassion of family, friends, and neighbours. Let us give thanks for the communion of all those who seek to serve others. And may we be strengthened in our efforts to be of service. May we always be mindful of all the good in our lives, whatever privilege, success, or happiness we have been blessed with. May our prayer be that we always see clearly and keep before us the commandment to care, striving always to be generous, inclusive, and open. On this day and every day, may we give thanks. But let us also be dissatisfied with the world as it is, for a new world, a realm of love, is still waiting to be realised. So may our bodies and spirits be nourished and nurtured as we give thanks in praise of all that sustains, all that heals and holds, all that is holy and good. And in a few moments of shared silence and stillness now, may we each speak inwardly those deepest prayers of our hearts, the joys and the sorrows that we came in carrying, whether that's in our own lives or the lives of the wider world. Let us each silently lift up whatever's on our heart this day and ask for whatever it is that we most need. Spirit of life, God of all love, as this time of prayer draws to a close, we offer up our joys and our concerns, our hopes and our fears, our beauty and our brokenness, and we call on you for insight, healing and renewal. As we look forward now to the coming week, help us to live well each day and be our best selves, using our unique gifts in the service of love, justice and peace. Amen. Time to sing again. Our next hymn is number 17 in your green books, Song of Thanksgiving. The words will be up on screen as usual. Stand or sit as you prefer. Song of Thanksgiving.
Oh,
So here we are. We're celebrating that it's 250 years since the very first publicly acknowledged Unitarian service here in England back in April 1774. It didn't happen here in this actual building. It didn't happen here on this particular bit of land in Notting Hill, West London. But it was the start of this Essex Church congregation. And it was a big deal at the time, a very big deal. That man called Theophilus Lindsay, whose name I always get my tongue twisted over, an Anglican minister from the northeast of England, he decided that he could no longer, in all good conscience, remain an Anglican. And he chose, with his wife, Hannah Lindsay, to give up their livelihoods and start again here in London. So they established the Essex Street Chapel in Essex Street in central London, just opposite the Law Courts in the Strand, and they took over an old auction house. And although, of course, those old buildings, original buildings, are long gone, our Unitarian headquarters are on the same site all these years later. So that congregation that Hannah and Theophilus Lindsay founded, it was the first of a number of congregations that declared themselves to be Unitarian in their faith. And you know, there were apparently government spies attending that first service, by all accounts tasked to inform the leaders of the day about what was taking place, what had been said and done. I'll be checking up all of your backgrounds later, just in case you're still here. There were members of the judiciary in attendance, members of Parliament, current and future. And it was still illegal at this time to assemble and pray if you held Unitarian beliefs. And that law would not be abolished until the Trinity Act of 1813. But law or no law, Unitarian thought and belief was buzzing in the later years of the 18th century. Yet even so, I reckon Theophilus was a daring man, and clearly a man of conscience when he gave up that Anglican priesthood to forge a new pathway of faith. He had a really clear sense of mission, of what he felt he was being called to do. He felt that he must speak his truth about matters of theology, whatever the consequences of that might be. His faith really was his life. And I find myself thinking too of Hannah, his wife, and how that life change would have affected her. Now, she was wealthy, apparently, in contrast to her husband. And from the little bits of information we have about her life and how she lived it, we know she dedicated herself to alleviating the sufferings she witnessed around her. At first in that Yorkshire village where they lived, and then later in central London, where they established Essex Street Chapel. In those days, the area was mostly very, very poor, with many tiny alleyways and back streets, highly polluted, especially in the summer months, when the Thames, pooey, reeked of sewage and decay. London's alleyways became Hannah's faith in action, using her resources and the resources of the congregation to improve health conditions for the many poor families that lived nearby, educating youngsters so they might have some chance of greater opportunities in adult life. Now, if Hannah and Theophilus Lindsay walked through that door and appeared in front of us right now, well, I reckon they would be absolutely astonished by all of us, but we'd be astonished too. Lindsay, you know, always thought that his breaking away from the Church of England would ultimately lead to a revised church, which would incorporate a wider range of theologies, including Unitarian beliefs. He was first and foremost a Christian, as were, of course, most people in this country. The pluralism of belief that we enjoy now would have been completely incomprehensible to people at the time. In the late 1700s, most people knew very little about other faiths. And Hannah and Theophilus would also be absolutely astonished to meet me and Jane as women ministers, although we've both got bits of black, clerical black, I feel we're wearing today. You see, that future reality was still a long way off. If we could meet them today, I think we'd be struck by what you might call a spiritual seriousness about them, because faith was really at the core of their living. It mattered deeply to them. Faith was shaping their choices day by day. Lives today are more complex, aren't they? And yet, I think still, many of us do have a sense of faith at the core of our being, a sense of faith shaping the ways that we're being in this world, a faith that is guiding our steps and our choices. It would be something to talk about later, wouldn't it? How our faith shapes each of our livings in the world today. So this congregation of ours that the Lindsays founded has, of course, gone through many stages to reach where we are now. There came a time in the late Victorian era when the population of central London had really greatly diminished, and so the Essex Street Chapel congregation merged with the congregation here in Kensington, an area at that time of considerable population growth. There was a small iron building here on this site, and that was replaced by a magnificent neo-Gothic brick church with a mighty spire, and then that too was replaced in the 1970s with the building we're enjoying now. Jane, you mentioned earlier that we have members of Brighton Unitarians joining us online today. I really enjoyed having a look at their website and discovering a number of interesting bits of information. Brighton Unitarians' history traces back to 1793, when 19 members of a Baptist church in Brighton were expelled because they could no longer believe in predestination. Something we don't talk about much now, but boy, was it important in those days. Predestination, the idea that anyone that God had not already picked for heaven was headed for everlasting hell, no matter what you did on earth. Now, that was the kind of belief that Unitarians were feeling passionately about, passionately against. They believed that it really mattered how we behaved in life, and that God was surely a loving and benevolent force in this world, not a harsh and completely arbitrary judge. I also read about Brighton Unitarians receiving the very posh organ that was removed from the old Essex Street church on this site when it was being readied for demolition back in 1973. So I want to thank you, Brighton, for giving that organ a very good home and looking after it better than we probably could be doing. So I hope this whistle-stop tour of this congregation's beginning and the beginnings of our Unitarian faith, I hope it gives us all encouragement to think how we are expressing our faith in the living of our lives and what we, in this congregation and in a wider Unitarian movement, might be building for the generations yet to come. So, after that exhausting tour of history, we're moving into a more meditative time in our service. There'll be a few words of introduction from me, and then that leads into a shared silence together, and then our musicians will play the second piece from the Danish string quartet, based on traditional Danish and Faroese wedding tunes. It's a lovely piece of music. So let's get ourselves as comfy as we can, whatever works best for you. Enjoy a moment of settling and stilling ourselves, making those little adjustments that can ease our bodies and perhaps blissfully help quieten our minds. Following perhaps the gentle rhythm of our breathing in and out, aware of our surroundings, aware of our feet resting on the floor if that's where they are, connecting us with the earth on which all life is lived. Making this a time for turning inwards and going deeper. And in our shared quiet, you might like to think of what calls you in life, what has called you, what or who has helped guide your journey of faith. What has brought you to this day, to this moment, to the community that you're in, perhaps? What might be whispering to us now in the quiet moments, in the stillness of the turning earth? What might our Unitarian community of the future require of us now? So we enter the fellowship of quietness together for a few minutes, and that silence will end with a chime from our bell.
Some years ago, I read a paper written by my ministry colleague, Stephen Lingwood, about Unitarian theology, and its opening premise really stuck with me. It's pertinent to this anniversary that we're celebrating today, so I want to share just a little excerpt from it with you now. Stephen Lingwood says this: "I am a Unitarian." That label, Unitarian, was also used by Theophilus Lindsay when he started the first explicitly Unitarian church in Britain back in 1774. What does it mean to make the claim that both he and I are Unitarians? What relationship do I have to Lindsay and this thing called Unitarian? What is the relationship any Unitarian has with Unitarians of the past? The language, practices, and beliefs of Lindsay seem to be radically different to mine. Unitarian tradition has changed, sometimes quite rapidly, and its self-understanding is that it does change and that it should do. But this does make the question even more pressing. In what sense do we claim religious continuity in this non-creedal tradition that allows for the freedom of religious evolution? In what sense is the Unitarianism of the past the same thing as the Unitarianism of the present? Very interesting question posed there by Stephen Lingwood. What have we got in common with Lindsay, who founded this church, founded Unitarianism in Britain 250 years ago? What have we got in common with the 200 or so people who gathered in the building on Essex Street? Let's imagine what it would have been like to attend one of Theophilus Lindsay's services. What do you reckon it might have been like? I wasn't confident that I could provide an accurate picture of those early services myself, so I reached out to a few colleagues this week, and I'm grateful to Daniel Costley for telling me about the work of history professor Grayson Ditchfield, who's researched the early history of the Essex Street Chapel. In 1774, as Sarah said, Lindsay had just left the Church of England, so his early services were very similar to what he'd left behind. Apparently, he more or less followed the Book of Common Prayer. He just took all the specifically Trinitarian bits out. Early Unitarianism, as practiced by Lindsay, was like a Reformed Church of England, more or less. The sermons were, as I understand it, very, very long. And in the early days, of the singing of the hymns was unaccompanied, and apparently, putting it politely, singing was terrible. It would have been a much more formal service than we're used to nowadays. If I suddenly decided I was going to go back to basics and preach you a Theophilus-style service next week, I don't think you'd like it very much. What Unitarianism looks like on a Sunday morning has changed quite a bit, in some ways at least. But still, this early Unitarianism was very radical in spirit. And as Sarah said, it was still illegal to preach Unitarian beliefs, even if the shape and the feel of that gathering was a bit traditional on the surface. It really mattered to the people who gathered at the Essex Street Chapel. They were spiritually serious enough to break away from the mainstream to pursue what they thought was right and true. Now, sometimes these days you hear Unitarians dismissed as people who believe what they like. But it's more accurate to say we believe what we must. And Theophilus Lindsay and all those early Unitarians must have been driven by something deep in order to pursue this new way of doing religion when it was countercultural, against the grain, illegal. They weren't prepared to sign up to the required dogmas of the mainstream church. They were compelled by their conscience to think for themselves. To seek the truth was a moral imperative. For each and every person to be free and unconstrained in their search for meaning, that really meant something to them, perhaps to a degree that we slightly take for granted nowadays, 250 years on. But to come back to Lingwood's question, what is our relationship with Lindsay, with his Essex Street congregation, and with those early Unitarians? Well, in the conclusion to Lingwood's paper, he says, "What is my relationship to Lindsay? The answer is we are both part of the same tradition. We're both involved in the same process of religious discovery. We're both part of a continuous, virtuous tradition seeking justice. And we share a collection of meaning-making stories. In fact, his story is one of the stories that gives me meaning. He is part of my tradition." And this take from Lingwood seems about right to me. What we have in common is not the shape of our worship, not especially, and not even specific beliefs. I suspect most of us gathered here today are not nearly as worried about the differences between Unitarian and Trinitarian theology in the way as our forebears were, or at least it's not such a burning and prominent question in most of our minds. It's more about the approach that we have to life's big questions and our commitment to an ongoing, ever-unfolding process of religious discovery, an honest search for truth and meaning, and a sincere quest to live good and virtuous lives, to help bring about justice, peace, and a better world for all. The continuity of this congregation over the last 250 years rests on this shared process and purpose, our mission. The outward forms have changed quite a bit, but this is the constant heart of our faith. And I've witnessed this unfolding in front of my own eyes, as well as celebrating our big anniversary this week. The actual 250th anniversary is on Wednesday the 17th, if you want to raise the toast or have a celebratory slice of cake in the comfort of your own home. But I'm going to be celebrating a smaller anniversary the day after, on the 18th, which is my 25th anniversary of first setting foot in this building. I was quite pleased that the numbers lined up like that. Even over 25 years, I've seen quite a bit of change in this congregation and in the wider denomination. But our change and our evolution should always be in service of our shared purpose, our mission, and in line with that process that's so characteristic of our tradition, that non-dogmatic pursuit of truth. That's why I chose the opening words this morning on the purpose of religion by Cliff Reid, as a reminder of what it is we're here for and the nature of this tradition we are upholding. It seems important that we should keep coming back to this again and again, reminding ourselves of this guiding vision. And indeed, we'll be thinking about our vision again in a couple of weeks' time when we have our AGM. Always a good moment to reflect on what we're doing in the light of our guiding purpose. Lingwood's question about what connects contemporary Unitarians with Lindsay and his congregation, that suggests another question to me. Rather than looking back, how will future generations of Unitarians look back on us in 250 years from now? 250 years is a long time. Will we make it that far? Will humanity make it that far? Let's scale it back. What about in 25 years' time, in 2049? I hope there are enough people of spiritual seriousness, people to whom this way of doing religion really matters, really means something. Enough people who will keep the doors open, who will step up and take this tradition onward. So our chalice flame will keep on burning for the next generation and hopefully even for centuries to come. But in 25 or 250 years, it probably won't look like church as we know it. We know how many changes we've seen here at Essex Church over the last 4 years. Our way of doing church has evolved, and for good reason. In order to fulfil our purpose, to uphold our values, we've made this move to hybrid services and taken a lot of our activities online. It has not been an entirely easy ride. Change is often challenging, and it was hard work to make it happen. It wasn't a change that was on our radar in any way 5 years ago, but I hope you'll agree. We did it because it's congruent with our Unitarian values. We did it for the sake of justice and inclusion, and I think it's something we can be proud of doing. So I hope future leaders of Essex Church, our spiritual descendants, will also ask themselves the same sort of questions when they're making plans and discerning the way forward for this congregation and for the Unitarian movement as a whole. I hope they ask themselves, is this in line with our Unitarian values? Does this serve our religious purpose? How does this fit with the mission of this church? And perhaps even, what is God calling us to do now, in this time and in this place? I hope they won't be too attached to church looking a particular way or to doing things the way they've always been done. I hope they'll continue to evolve to better serve the mission. But even as the world changes and our church changes, there will be this thread of continuity as each new generation steps up to be stewards of this precious tradition, so our shared purpose and process will go on. So in that spirit, I invite you now to join in the responsive reading that you'll find in your orders of service. The words will also be up on screen in a moment. This piece is adapted from words from Scott Alexander. It's called We Need a Religion. And it affirms something of that shared purpose, process and values that we have as Unitarians. So I invite you to join in as you wish with the responses that are printed in bold. In a world with so much hatred and violence, we need a religion that proclaims the inherent worth and dignity of every person. In a world with so much brutality and fear, we need a religion that seeks justice, equity and compassion in human relations. In a world with so many persons abused and neglected, we need a religion that calls us to accept one another and encourage one another to spiritual growth. In a world with so much tyranny and oppression, we need a religion that affirms the right to freedom of thought and conscience and the proper use of the democratic process. In a world with so much inequity and strife, we need a religion that strives towards the goal of world community with peace, liberty and justice for all. In a world with so much environmental degradation, we need a religion that advocates awareness and respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. In a world with so much uncertainty and despair, we need a religion that teaches our hearts to hope and our hands to care. In a world where so many people yearn for connection, yearn for love, we need religious communities like ours to welcome all people of goodwill, offering a place to call home, to belong, where each can be who we truly are. Amen. One last hymn now, and it's a stirring one to end on. Number 208 in your hymn books, Forward Through the Ages. The words will be up on screen once again. Sing up as you can, and let's enjoy our closing hymn. Just a few announcements now. And Brighton, please do stay with us because you won't want to miss the closing music. Thanks to Sarah for co-leading our service today, to Ramona for tech hosting, and Charlotte for co-hosting and welcoming everyone at home. Thanks to the Chien Quartet and to Andrew for playing, and to Benji supporting our singing. Just fabulous music today. Thank you so much. Thanks to Juliet for greeting, and I see that Liz and Lynn have already run out to the kitchen to get the kettle on. They're doing the tea. If you're in person, please do stay if you want to. We've got a lunch after the service. I'm sure there'll be plenty of food. There's at least two cakes. If you're on Zoom, please do hang around for a chat with Charlotte. On Friday we've got our Heart and Soul Contemplative Spiritual Gathering online at 7 o'clock. This week's theme is belief. We gather for sharing and prayer, and it's a really good way to get to know other people on a deeper level. Email me if you want to come to that, or you can come in person. We've got an in-person one this Wednesday at 7 o'clock in the church. Again, it'd be good to know who's coming for cake rationing purposes. It's just 2 weeks until our membership service and AGM, so do come along to that if you can. The annual report hopefully will be out sometime this week. I sent out membership renewal emails this week as well, so please do fill that in as soon as you can to reaffirm your belonging to this congregation. And if you're a newcomer who's not joined up yet, have a word with me if you want to know what that entails. No financial commitment. It's about pledging your heart, saying, yes, I'm a member of this congregation, and that's something to feel proud of. What else have we got coming up? On the 28th, we've also got the Better World book group. I have one copy left from the library if anyone wants to borrow What's in a Name by Sheila Banerjee. And that's on the 28th at 7:30. Getting some very positive feedback about the people who have already read this book. So, it's a good one. Further ahead, on the 4th and 5th of May, we've got our next mini retreat, the Spiritual Backpack. Some of you will have been to that when I first ran it in 2021. That'll be online on the 4th and repeated in person on the 5th. I need 6 people for each of those for them to go ahead, so do sign up early if you want them to happen. Next Sunday we're back for a regular service celebrating Earth Day, and special music continues because we're going to have not one but 2 bassoons in the house, which I'm very excited about. And Margaret will be offering singing class after next week's service as well. And I think there's still some uncertainty about when the next yoga class is going to be. There's definitely one in May, but we might get a bonus extra one next week. So if you're interested in yoga with Hannah next Sunday, have a word. I think that's everything. Details of all our activities are printed on the back of the order of service. They're all in the Friday email. So if you haven't yet signed up to the mailing list, do get on that. The congregation very much has a life beyond Sunday morning, so do what you can to look out for each other. Build supportive connections. Keep in touch. So just time for our closing words and closing music now. As you prepare to leave this sacred space, pack away a piece of this church in your heart. Wrap it carefully, like a precious gem. Carry it with you through the joys and sorrows of your days, and let its gentle glow strengthen and warm you. Let it remind you of all that is good and true, until you gather here again in this place of love. May it be so for the greater good of all. Amen. Thank you.